I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is the 364th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk sell in May. We're going to talk, did they go away? Are they coming back? We're going to talk Iran. We're going to talk about Elon going to China. We're going to talk about the war on fraud. A lot to get to. It's been an interesting week, as it usually is. First and foremost, Mr. Hodge, how goes you and your beautiful family this fine middle of May Thursday?
I'm doing great, Gerardo. Everything is still awesome. What you put on the sheet, kids are looking forward to the end of school, as I was just telling you. The weather is warming up here in the Pacific Northwest, although the pool's not open yet, but that will happen soon enough.
I am well. I am great. How are you? I got a message. I'm feeling grateful and thankful, and I got a message from a close friend like 10 minutes before we started this, just letting me know that a close friend of their family, a family member of theirs, had passed. And so I just want to say, you know, condolences to the Perez family, and say I'm feeling thankful and grateful, and it really just provides context and perspective, right? Especially when we have wars around the world and exploding debt levels and Trump suing the IRS and, you know, all this stuff. And you get a text like that and a message like that from somebody that's close, and it kind of really puts everything in perspective. So condolences to the Perez family, man. Y'all keep your head up there. Big hugs. And, ready to get to it. I thought it was definitely worth mentioning, and I think gives everybody hopefully some context and appreciation for whatever good you have in your life, man. Cherish it, because it can change in a heartbeat.
I don't know if you saw the commencement speech by Eric Church that was going around this week at the North Carolina University. Very well done. He was talking about the six strings of his guitar, and he equated each string to like something in your life, and one of them was definitely family, so super important.
That's it.
And
that's it.
Keep those things in mind.
Listen, let's get into the markets. It's been a week. We have gold back below 4,700, 4,655. Silver had itself a week, down some 4 or 5% today at the 8,350 level. Both still look healthy to me. Gold looks a little bit more short term. I don't want to call it bearish, but just more sideways-ish than silver does to me. Silver actually looks like it really wants to make another run at 100. And so I'm curious to get your technician's take on the levels as it relates to gold in the short term and silver in the short term, because I think we probably both agree that mid to long term, both of those are still very, very bullish.
Yeah, I think I told you as much last week would be the case for the precious side of things, because the bond yields have been going up. And so and even the dollar strengthened up just a bit, but mainly the bond yields, really, since the war broke out, have been strengthening, so much so that the 30-year is at, you know, almost as high as it's been since 2007 or something like that, up around 5%. And so that's been putting a lid on or producing that sideways action that you talk about in the gold space.
I don't know
if you want the levels or not, but you know, it's bullish down to around $4,530 in the short term. It can go all the way down to 4,000 or below, not too much below, but a little bit below, and still be bullish in the long term. So there's still a great price for gold at $4,600 or something like that. And you're starting to see that reflected in the earnings reports of not just the producers, but the royalty companies as well.
Unless you asked CNBC. So, I don't know if you saw that. That's a credit, but they were asking CNBC about Agnico Eagle, and the expert on there said they don't buy companies that don't produce cash. And I don't know, whatever you feel about the mainstream media on the financial news side of things, they clearly don't look at anything related to the gold space, because Agnico is printing cash hand over fist. I mean, you look at the quarters that are being reported by these companies. It's no coincidence that M&A is really picking up because of the robust balance sheets and the amount of cash flow that is coming out of this robust, you know, commodity super cycle that we're in. But no, I found that hilarious, and it lets me know I'm positioned right when the bulk of the mainstream still has absolutely no clue. It really speaks to Rick Rule's point that historically 2% of U.S. households own some gold, and right now we're at 0.5%. You really have to get to like a tripling or quadrupling of the gold price to be back just at historical levels. And that segment specifically with CNBC, it made my contrarian heart smile. That's me know I'm positioned okay.
Yep, I saw all that. I saw the CNBC stuff. I saw Rick out there with his tropes, as he does. People love those. And so, yeah, still a contrarian trade, despite having been above $5,000 an ounce just a couple of short months ago. But still bullish in the long term, obviously. Still a lot of debt out there. Still a lot of deficit spending. Still a lot of geopolitical turmoil, obviously. And so lots of bull market underpinnings and catalysts, including your new Fed chair, Mr. Warsh, who got voted in this week. No surprise there. Silver acting a little bit better, as you said, because, you know, it's not purely precious. It's got the industrial side to it and is needed for things like clean energy and other stuff, right? And stuff is probably the right word. I was telling you last week that the industrial metals, yep, aluminum and copper, which we can talk about in a second, is really where the inflation is materializing. Those and the soft commodities, right? The beef and the cotton and the sugar, et cetera. And now we need to do all these actions to help the farmers again and to lower the price of beef and other stuff. Maybe we'll talk about it in a little bit. You could have just not started a war, is my take on
that.
It's
six-dimensional chess. The plan now is to get the strait reopened and Iran to not have a nuclear weapon, which is where Iran was before we started bombing the heck out of it. If you recall, everybody, for those of you that got lost in the six-dimensional chess that Donald Trump and the administration is playing, the strait was open. And there were no issues with goods flowing through it. And there was a system in place that was orderly and peaceful. And Iran did not have a nuclear weapon. But here we are with Israel still not committing any troops to the ground. And here we are with $39 trillion in debt. And we'll talk about debt in a bit, because whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, or if you're kind of agnostic, like I'm mostly agnostic at this point, the math is very real and doesn't really care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, a Libertarian, you got purple hair, pink hair, no hair. The math is the math, and the math don't look good right now for the bulk of the folks.
Yeah, now we need a whole nother project. It was Epic Fury, and now we need Project Freedom to open up the straits with 15,000 troops and land-based and sea-based mechanisms and all sorts of stuff. And your energy secretary, Chris Wright, was just, you know, testifying or proselytizing this week that, you know, Iran is still weeks away from getting a bomb. So there's always that boogeyman there, right, to further the aims of the administration or those pulling the strings for the administration and, on both sides of the uniparty, as lots of folks are now calling it. And that's frankly what it is. But silver doing really good, as you said. I don't have the chart in front of me, but yes, it's outpacing gold pretty handily over the past 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months. You know, gold or silver can get back to $90. You shouldn't be surprised. It's got a really wide range on it. Can swing from, you know, low 70s to high 90s. And again, that's because of the industrial nature. So I guess that's about it on precious metals. Copper looks really good. I mean, all-time record highs for copper, well up north of, in fact, above $6.50, closer to $7 now than $6, hit like $6.60-some cents. Yep. I might just talk about that for a little bit. I was writing about it today in the Underground Alpha issue, and there's all kinds of drivers there, right? You've been talking about the sulfuric acid, which, you know, relates back to that strait that was open and now is closed. And folks being producers of copper can't get the sulfuric acid they need to leach the ore to get the copper, right? Lots of reports going around about that, especially as it relates to Chile, which is one of the largest producers of copper in the world. I was reading this week, they import a million metric tons of sulfuric acid a year, and they haven't got a single shipment since March. And they need it to produce like 20% of the copper that they produce. And so issues there. What else? We're getting a bifurcation again, something we talked about several months ago with the price here in the United States on the COMEX now separating itself from the price on the London Metals Exchange, the LME. And that's a result of, you know, the ongoing tariff stuff, which is, you know, one of the reasons that Mr. Trump is now on his delayed trip to China. And I think people forget that we're currently in the middle of a Section 232 investigation. We've talked about that before, and then we talked about it many years ago as it related to uranium, and now it's being applied to copper. That's when the Commerce Department does an investigation and puts out reports saying that, yes, the trade is being manipulated, and then we can take actions to, correct that. And that's why copper continues to be stockpiled in the U.S. It's why the price continues to be high in the U.S. And then all the other things, right? I mean, significant copper demand for the AI and the data center build out. We were talking last week about how just the big four companies are going to spend $700 billion doing that this year. And so, you know, taking all that together, you're now seeing forecasts of 100, 200, 300, up to 500,000 tons of deficit in terms of copper supply just this year and in 2026. And obviously it widens after that. So copper producers starting to look good again, and a lot of other commodities as well.
Yeah, no. That's exactly the answer that I wanted to the question. And look, however we feel about the sideways trading in the gold space or the pullback just today in silver, I'm telling you folks, it's absolutely noise. Inflation just came in, and I wrote about it earlier this week for Daily Profit Cycle, now Bizarro World, by the way. We're starting to transition that over to the Bizarro World brand. But I was writing, and let me just read a little bit of what I wrote. Look, inflation just came in at 3.8%, right? That's for the first time in 3 years. And so that's higher than wage growth here in the U.S. That's a problem. The reason that's a problem is because the U.S. household debt is now at $18.8 trillion. Household debt is up $4.6 trillion since January of 2020. Mortgage debt is 13.2 of that $18.8 trillion household debt. Credit card debt is the second highest it's ever been. That's a long time, folks. Student loan debt, same thing. So I sit here and I try to look ahead and I go, okay, well, if inflation is ramping up and that's not going to be transitory, to use Jerome's old favorite word, right? It's not going to be transitory. We have analysts that are saying another few days of the closing of the strait is going to lead to, you know, inflationary pressures well into 2027. So this isn't one of those situations where we get an agreement tomorrow that actually sticks, and all of a sudden, all is solved within the next month. Some of this is going to carry forward into 2027. So I'm looking at that. If household debt is the second highest it's ever been, credit card debt is the second highest it's ever been, that tells me people have been tapping credit card and mortgage equity to get by and to deal with inflation and to deal with an economy that increasingly is, again, by design, working great for those that are at the very top, because those are the people making the policy, not so great for the rest of America, right? So I look at all that and I go, okay, well, the only shot really that the average American has is for their home prices to go up, and they hopefully continue to rise so they have more equity to tap. But even if they have more equity to tap, you're doing it at 7%. They're going to have to get the mortgage rates down. And how do you cut when you got inflation running as rampant as it is? It's a sticky little 70s-like stagflation situation, folks. I am convinced, and I could be wrong, this is my tinfoil speculative crystal ball hat talking right now, but I'm convinced that the Treasury is injecting money into the stock market pretty aggressively. It's why we have all-time highs in all the indices, right? And I'm also convinced that it's going to do that aggressively in the stock market. 4.5 on the 10-year and 5 on the 30, that's the boogeyman for this administration. It is not a coincidence that every time the 10-year hits 4.5, all of a sudden we got a deal. It's close, baby. It's tomorrow. I'm six-dimensional chess. And then the minute they're able to talk the rates down or intervene in the markets and get the rates down, you know, it's back to whatever Israel wants. And that is the game that's being played. And if you don't believe that's the game that's being played, we're going to talk about Thomas Massey later on and the game that's being played down in Kentucky. So again, it's not a partisan thing. It's just you got to know who's pulling the strings at this point. So I don't know what you think, Nick, but how do you see this playing out? Like, is the average American just in for like a rough, you know, next 12 to 18 months of high debt levels, high interest rates, no more credit to tap and no more equity to tap?
Yeah, I mean, there's some charts going around this week showing inflation lined up with the 1970s, and it's following a very similar pattern. We all know how that played out for the gold space. I don't know, and not to mention just the debt that you were talking about, but prices as well. I mean, go fill your tank, right? I mean, you know, I've seen $6-7 diesel here in Washington State, and I know that you know, gas and diesel prices are high across the board, eating into household budgets, eating into beer budgets. I was looking at something this week that said as these gas prices have gone up, like beer sales have gone down commensurately. People got to put the liquid in their tank and
I told you
their bellies.
That's so what cut you off.
It's tough out there.
My CPI index, right? My personal CPI index. They're $30 now, and they're not like just $30 from like the prettiest girls at the club. They're just $30 standard. Like, that's what you're getting. So if you don't believe inflation is real, a jump from 20 to 30 is a substantial hit on the average gentleman and gentle lady's budget who is looking for a fun evening or night.
30 just for the mids, huh? Yeah, no, everything's expensive. We booked 3 nights at, you know, just a local lake condo here for the summer. We booked it. My wife was like, hey, you want to go to the lake like we did that summer? And I was like, yeah. And she forwarded me the booking email. And I was like, $3,000 for three nights? It was like, oh, my God.
Yep.
Things are getting out of control. But it is what it is. A lot of liquidity in the system. So you talk about the feds injecting it. You know that NVIDIA hit a $5.5 trillion market cap this week. $5.5 trillion. It's larger than every economy in the world except for the United States and China, that one single company. So and then you asked me how it's going to play out. You know, we just got Fed Warsh confirmed. I don't know how he cuts rates, though, because I was reading about that this week as well. First of all, there's no reason he should be cutting rates, given that we're going to be at 4% inflation by the time he takes the chair there at the Fed. You said we were just at 3.8. It's going to 4, if not 4.25, 4.5 in a damn hurry. And yes, he wants to cut rates. And yes, he's a Trump lapdog. And yes, that's why Trump picked him, because you know, he thinks that, you know, Jerome should have already lowered rates. The thing is, the Fed chairman can't unilaterally lower rates, right? And if you look at the last votes, the last two votes, I think one was, there's 12 votes, you know, the last two votes, two times ago, it was 11-1. There was only one person who voted to cut rates. And the most recent vote at the meeting at the end of April was 8-4. And it was only 4 because one person wanted lower rates, but 3 people voted against what was on the table because they opposed the language of lowering the rates. So still, there was only one person in favor of lowering the rates. I don't know how you do that headed into the fall. You and I and others I've been reading are saying that, you know, that's another major catalyst for gold if they do cut rates. But I don't know how they do it. So I think you got to get an end to this war. And heaven forbid, I think you have to get a presidential administration and a Congress that actually has a solid head on their shoulders. But as you were saying, the only folks that are making any sense, i.e. Mr. Massey, are getting attacked by the administration, right? And so, goodness, it's a bizarre world. And this is what we've been telling you for going on 7 years now since we started this podcast, is that the government doesn't care about you on either sides, and there's no easy ways out except to own the assets that are inflating, and that's what they continue to do. So I don't think our audience is in that lower half of the K, and I feel bad for how it is and how the system is set up. But what we preach is how to be on the top side of the K, and that plan has worked out pretty well.
The Fed governors are like the opposite of the holy apostles, right? It's like there's 12 of them, and all they do is figure out how to screw the average American person out of their savings and out of their equity. And limit the upward mobility that was once the source of great pride in this country. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that Mr. Trump and the CEOs of the biggest companies in America are in China or on the way back. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that this administration now is open to possibly $1 trillion worth of Chinese-owned factories here in the U.S. Think about that for a second. My father in the 80s, I grew up in Chicago. I spent my childhood there, right? He worked at one of the factories that subsequently was shut down when a lot of the manufacturing jobs got shipped out. And some of that was NAFTA in the late 80s and, you know, a combination of China, a combination of factors. It wasn't just one thing. But my point is to say the net effect on sovereignty of allowing $1 trillion in Chinese investment unchecked here in America, built in America, think about that, is ironic to me again in a not funny kind of way, and tells you exactly where we're at in 2026 America. I'll tie that into the Massey thing. Thomas Massey on Vote. I don't know this gentleman personally. I don't know his moral compass. I don't know his principles. I know his voting record, right? And whatever disagreements I may have with his policy, he seems like a principled voter when it comes to the issues that his constituents continually have reelected him for. He's consistent on the Second Amendment. He's consistent on the First. He's consistent on the Fourth. He's consistent on immigration policy that makes sense. And so when he comes out and says, I want to release the Epstein files because these people need to be in prison, and all of a sudden you have all of this AIPAC money and all of these, it's $10 million in outside money for a tiny seat somewhere in Kentucky funded to bring Thomas Massey down. 1 week before the election, they roll out this lady that says that, 2 months after Thomas Massey's wife unfortunately passed, they had an affair and that she had filed a complaint. Thomas Massey said, listen, I've never had a complaint filed against me. My lawyers will be in touch. It looks and smells and walks and talks like a hit piece, right? Clearly. And so now the walk back is, well, okay, there wasn't a complaint filed and there wasn't sexual harassment and there wasn't a payout paid. They walked all that back because the lawyers were getting involved. Now his mortal sin is he may have had a relationship, a consensual one, with a woman 2 months after his wife passed. God forbid a man wants to have a sexual relationship, a consensual one, 2 months after his wife passes. And that may be the thing that gets him unseated in Kentucky, a consensual relationship with a woman. And the people that unseat him are the same people that are protecting the rapists and God knows what else of children in those Epstein files, boys and girls. Again, how telling of where we are in America in 2026. We're encouraging $1 trillion investment in China, Chinese factories in America, simultaneously unseating one of the most principled Republican voters on record with money from the people that don't want to show you who's in the Epstein files or arrest anybody. It is a bizarro, bizarro world, folks. So do I take rate cuts off the table? I don't. Mathematically, it shouldn't happen. Ethically, it shouldn't happen. It shouldn't have happened for a long time. There's a lot of things that have happened and that are happening that shouldn't be happening. So I don't even know anymore, Nick. I it's a tricky one. Sorry for the rant.
I've seen people attack. No, it's a good one. I've seen people, the MAGA crowd attacking Massey online. And I just sort of scratch my head because those folks that I follow, we've already talked about Rick Rule and there's other folks who I view as, quasi-libertarian or, I think Rick would probably say that, he's an anarcho-capitalist for most intents and purposes. These guys are supportive of Thomas Massey. Rick's been out there saying that, he's donated to his campaign. You've said that you donated to his campaign. I view him as a quality candidate based on his voting record and the things that he said, not just because of the Epstein stuff. And so for, him to be attacked in this primary, as they say, by the MAGA Nation is just wild to me. And it, I think he's going to win. I'm looking at the Poly Market betting odds right now, and he's currently at 65%. But his opposition came out of nowhere. Like back in January at the start of the year, he was at like 75%, and he dipped as low as 55% just in the past 2 months as this money has come in and has produced a credible threat to his reelection campaign. Ultimately, I think he's going to win, but it just shows you what happens behind the scenes there with the payola and the lobbyists and the nasty political machine, right? That doesn't want what's best for you and I, surprise, surprise, or for the lovely people of Kentucky, but wants what's best for the political machine and its ends.
That they chose to run against Massey because they couldn't find anyone else that could even poll like high enough to even qualify to run against Massey. He didn't even show up in the debate. He was like, I ain't debating you. Fuck these constituents. Kentucky, this tiny ass little district. I got APAC money, bitch. Yeah, that's the attitude of that. That's their attitude, folks. That ain't mine. That's language that they use with their dollars. And so we get the money out of politics and citizens, the Citizens United vote overturn in the Supreme Court. Like, I don't think it changes in the near term without serious volatility, I'll put it that way, here in America. So anyhow, back to the markets. Everything is awesome for some. Everything is not awesome for others. It's a tale of two worlds right now. Unfortunately, that's what it is. Look, the last thing that I wrote in that piece for Bizarro World was, I can't control the policy and the money in politics and the term limits that I want instituted and how I would like, you know, to undo the Fed and all of that. But I can control how I position myself and friends and family and readers. And I know this much. I know the stuff you can't print out of thin air that the elites need for their data center dreams. That's the stuff that I want to be positioned in. That includes silver. That includes lithium. That includes uranium. The stuff they're going to use as a hedge and are using as a hedge against monetary irresponsibility and fiscal irresponsibility, gold. I absolutely want exposure to that. So copper, it's not a coincidence making brand new highs. It's not just the sulfur, right? It's the demand that's coming from the data center and not just the data centers, but just real economic prospects. Like, yes, we're going through stagflation in the US right now. And in Europe, they have it worse. Overseas, it's tougher, right? Rates are tough over there too. And they have a tougher situation than even we do. That'll change eventually. I don't want to gloom and doom it. I'm usually the optimist, right? It'll turn, but we need, back to Rick being or describing himself as an, what'd you call him? An anarchist capitalist? Anarcho-capitalist. Back to that.
Anarcho-capitalist.
Like, we need
a
price discovery cycle to be allowed to take place in the markets. Unfortunately, that's being manipulated. So when we get through that phase of artificially stimulating the assets that are owned by the rich, then we get back to, you know, a growing economy, a naturally robustly growing economy that I think, you know, cures a lot of these ails. But again, I don't see that as right around the corner.
Yeah. A couple more things I wanted to get out of my mouth before we switch topics and see if I can stitch some things together. S&P at, you know, all-time record highs. I see a lot of bubble talk out there. I see a lot of crash calls. I see people giving interviews calling for the top and I just don't see that, at least not until later in this year as this inflation works its way through the system. You mentioned things that you can drop on your foot. Obviously the commodities are in a bull market, and I came across a piece that I wrote a couple of years ago because, as you said, we're migrating away from the Daily Profit Cycle website, and we're going to put everything over on bizarroworld.com, which is now up, and that will be our free daily site, and the daily editorials will start coming from that. And I was putting together some material for that, some reports and other things, and I was going back and looking through articles, and I've told you about Jackie before, and I've written about Jackie, the lady who helps clean our house, and then she's been with us basically since we moved to Spokane here, so about 10 years, and a couple of years ago, she started talking to me about investments, and the article I found was, she was coming to me talking about how it was either people she cleaned for or somebody she knew had been investing in Rivian, And should she invest in Rivian? And I wrote an article about it. And what I told her was, I don't know much about Rivian. I know about electric car companies, et cetera, but I wouldn't want to have to pick the winner of that, you know, EV race. I would rather invest in the inputs that go into the EVs. And sure enough, go and pull up a chart of Rivian for the past 2 or 3 years, and you'll see that they haven't done
too
well.
That's what the chart looks like,
folks. Yeah. And And lithium is at a multi-year high. I was writing about that, and I know you keep your finger on the pulse of lithium prices, but lithium's tripled just in the past couple of months here, like from below $9,000 a metric ton of lithium carbonate to almost $30,000. Yeah. And the spodumene prices are going up as well. I didn't mean for this to be a lithium talk. What I wanted to talk about was more about Jackie. So a couple more recently than her Rivian talk with me, she came to me and she said, you know, I unfortunately had an aunt pass away who left me some money. Would you be willing to help me invest that? And of course I did. I went to Schwab with her. We set up the accounts. I did my little allocations, you know, for her IRA or whatever. And I monitor that like every couple of weeks. We log into her account and I look at it. And recently she's been showing other like she has other clients, obviously, right? She's like, and some guys are like finance guys. She was like, I was showing my portfolio to this other finance guy I cleaned for. And he was like, oh man, Jackie, you're aggressive. You're in South Korea. Like I got her like the South Korea ETF. You know what stock market has been hitting all-time record highs like week after week after week? It's the South Korean market, the KOSPI market, right? It has the chip makers. It has Samsung, which, by the way, is the latest company to reach a $1 trillion market cap. And so she was on a cruise for the past 2 weeks, so I hadn't seen her. And she came the other day, and I said, hey, Jackie, how's your portfolio going? And she was like, Nick, I logged in the other day, and I was like, oh, my God. And I was like, see, Jackie, I told you. And so anyway, all that to say, that's what we try to do is help people allocate their capital. It's not mainstream sometimes. Like that financial advisor that she showed it to would not have her in a South Korean ETF. But that's sort of like what Bizarro World is. And that's what I was writing the report about, which is why I started talking about this. It's like, you know, there's a rise, or there should be a rise. There is, but I think it's got more to go of self-directed investment, right? Like there's no reason to have a financial advisor put you in the S&P. Like you can buy the SPY on your own and not have to give a percent away, even if you want to just be as conservative as that. But there are ways to allocate capital to the South Koreas, to the Bitcoins, to the junior mining sectors, to the coppers that, you know, nobody that's got a fiduciary duty is going to put you in because exactly right. So that's it. That was what I wanted to talk about. BizarroWorld.com is up. The first report is up about investing in a bizarre world and a checklist I included there of how to think about the current markets and why you need to be contrarian and all that sort of stuff. So I was just happy that Jackie was happy when she got back from her cruise.
And I love that you gave the timeline being like a couple of years, right? Because you know, back to why they the average financial planner wouldn't be able to allocate you know your portfolio into what Nick does. And Nick is even more conservative than I. Like I go in the highest risk, highest reward, you know, sector, which is junior resource stocks. And even then I really don't do many producers or development companies. I stick to mostly explorers. So of course, the way the universe works, I had several friends when everything was ripping come to me and say, hey, Gerardo, like I've seen what you do. I followed along. I've been following the gains. Like I have, you know, this pocket of money here. Will you help me allocate some of it? Kind of like Jackie did with you, right? So I gave him the speech that I give everybody else. I said, look, I'm happy to help with ideas and you know, show you how to set it up. I'm going to tell you right now, it's high risk, it's high reward. At some point, I'm typically early. I don't do things on less than like a 2-year time frame because you're going to be wrong timing wise sometimes, even if you get the thesis right, even if you get the commodity right, and even if the story is doing the right thing, sometimes you just get pullbacks. And so of course I allocate capital for these two friends in January. What's the first thing that happens? 40-50% drawdown in the junior resource space, right? So of course I get the text and they're like, hey, am I gonna be okay? Is everything okay? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. You said you had at least 2 years, right? And remember the first thing I told you, I said at some point you're gonna be down 40 or 50%. That's absolutely normal in the space. They go, yeah, no. I remember all that. And it's all cool. I just wanted to make sure like it was going to be okay. I'm like, yes, it's going to be okay. I promise you. But it's very cyclical, folks. And that's, you know, you touched on that, Nick. And having a time frame that allows for coming in a January where things are toppy and due for a pullback. There's companies now that are worth 40 or 50% of what they were worth in January that are much better, more de-risked companies. You have to take advantage of those cycles and you have to understand that this is a commodity super cycle that's got years and years of legs to run. So it's going to be a very, very good. It's going to continue to be a very, very good couple of years. To that point, you touched on lithium, copper, silver, gold. I don't believe that the sell in May crowd is right this year. I think the war in Iran scared the bejeebies out of most people, especially in the junior space and risk capital. And I think a lot of that was pulled forward in April and in March. And I think as a consequence, and I'm starting to see it in a rebound in the juniors, and I'm starting to see it not just on price, but on volume. It looks to me like the juniors now are starting to go through that price discovery cycle that I was mentioning the overall sectors need to go through and the overall economy needs to go through, where people are starting to get back to looking at companies and going, okay, if company A has got $17 million in the bank and it's worth $35 million and has no reason to go to the market, why has it sold off 50% over the last 3 or 4 months? And now you're starting to see bids into these companies. I think that actually carries through the summertime. My one disclaimer to that, the asterisk, is this administration, which, you know, just day by day clearly has very little direction or purpose, right? There was, it was funny, not funny, but J.D. Vance was on TV today on Fox giving a speech about fraud and how the president tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, J.D., I need you to be my bulldog on fraud. I need you to go after these guys. And my algorithm likes to play with me, right? It's like the very next article is from the New York Times. Yeah.
Adani?
Where this Indian billionaire was just pardoned like today by Trump for fraud.
For what?
And so I'm looking at the two headlines, right? Like my algorithm is like, it's like money issues, financial stuff, sports, and big booty girls. That's what the algorithm gives me for whatever reason, right? And on these two top parts, I'm like, wait a minute. J.D. Vance is out here right now giving a speech on how he's the bulldog on fraud for Trump. And Trump just pardoned this guy who was prosecuted under the Biden era because the guy hired one of Trump's attorneys that has worked for the Trump family. And the guy and the attorney promised that they would inject billions into the American economy and provide up to 15,000 jobs was the promise. You follow up on that and see how that works out. And there's been a bunch of these this year. These guys here right now are like the kings of pardoning fraud this year. I could go down the list of 10 people where it's like hundreds of billions of dollars worth of fraud pardons that have happened the same exact way.
Well, I was going to talk about Adani in a second, but you did a pretty good job there hitting the high points. One thing you didn't mention, you mentioned the attorney that got him the deal. You remember a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about the AI and the attorneys and the attorney group that was submitting AI hallucinations that was a big, also represented the president of the United States. It's the same law firm. Adani has the AI hallucination law firm.
It's all a simulation.
Like, you can't make this shit up, man.
It's a bizarre world, folks. I don't know how else to put it. If you don't see it, if you don't understand it, and you think this, I mean, look, if you're like the billionaire class and this Adani guy is proof, right? If you're the billionaire class, I get why, like, you're flying with Trump, you know, on Air Force One. If you're Musk and then like, I completely understand. I don't fault any of those guys for doing it. Not the committing crimes parts, the parts where they're trying to lobby government. They have the financial resources. They have the legal resources. And this administration is very open to bribery and bribes. Like, they're clear as day about it. They don't even try to hide it anymore. They asked Trump the other day, what does he think about the American people and the rising costs of everyday stuff like gas and groceries? And he said, I don't think about the American people. I just care that Iran doesn't get a nuclear weapon. And the reporter, instead of coming back and saying, but Iran's never had a nuclear weapon, like the Obama administration actually struck a deal where like 90% of the enrichment capabilities were taken off the table. And all 18 agencies that are trusted with oversight to make sure they don't have one have all said, they don't have one. They don't have the capacity to have one, right? And by the way, Israel does have one. And by the way, the U.S. does have one. And Pakistan has one. It's like countries having the capability to defend themselves isn't anything new. And despite that, Iran still doesn't appear to have the capabilities to be able to do that. And again, I'm no expert on that matter. I just do know, I know that like 6 months ago, we bombed a facility that was supposed to be like the last of what they could possibly ever do with that. And we took a victory lap on it. And then 6 months later, we were told they were weeks away again. So there is no direction. So my disclaimer about, do I think this light rally in the juniors and the resource space continues? I do believe so. The one asterisk is, you know, if World War III does break out, because it's just hard to tell what's true from not true as far as ceasefires and agreements and negotiations and whether they have merit. I mean, even the markets, it's not listening to the administration anymore. They're following like ships and tankers that are going to the Strait and seeing the volume there. And, you know, that tells the story. I think the oil price, the dollar index, that tells the story, I think, a little better than, more accurately, I should say, than what the administration says. That's my rant. I'll stop.
Yeah. Just to put a point on it, that guy, Adani, is the 17th richest man in the world, worth $104 billion. And the reason he was indicted was for orchestrating a $250 million scheme, $265 million scheme to bribe Indian government officials to secure lucrative solar contracts in India. So big business trumps all.
Well done.
And you should see that all. In the cadre, thank you. In the cadre of folks that went with him to China, right? It's not like all the Republican billionaires went with him. Like, you know, Tim Cook is traveling
Elon
along
Musk
with
is
him, right? Like Elon Musk, who was like they had beef with, right? And so, look, it's about the money always, and that's just how it is. So I don't know anything about whether this guy should be pardoned. I don't know why we're prosecuting people for bribing folks in India. I don't know anything about that, but I do know how the system works and why he was pardoned. Although, you know, I don't know about the justification for it. So one last thing before, I don't know if we got more to talk about on the bizarre side of things, but I want to talk about uranium for 1 second. Cause we didn't mention it last week. And the chart was starting to look pretty good. Let me see if I can get it up here real fast. And now the chart has started to back off. So a couple words on uranium before we switch gears here, if I can get it up screen. Yeah, here it is. So uranium starting to look pretty good, like rallied hard to start 2026, sort of sold off, consolidated a little bit. And then a couple of weeks ago, perked right back up. It looked like it wanted to break out and now has started to sell back off. I think it's a decent, or will be if this sell-off continues, decent point to get into the uranium space if you haven't yet, or if you're looking to add. And most recently did that back here at the end of March, was talking about it on this podcast in terms of like Denison and Energy Fuels, not to talk about too many companies, but bought this dip and it bounced off the levels that I was willing to buy those companies at pretty nicely. So what's happened since then is a couple of things. Let me see, bring the call back here. Yeah, stop sharing the screen. So there was a press release a couple of days ago. I don't know if you saw it, Gerardo, but that was scrolling through Twitter as I do, and it was in my email because I get the alerts from Cameco, and Cameco put out a press release at like 2 minutes after midnight the other night. It might have even been Sunday night, like before the market opened on Monday.
Yeah, saying,
"We got a little flood over here," and I was like, "Cameco flood, go on." And it was like it took out a bridge that we get our critical supplies from for the Key Lake Mill and MacArthur River, and I was like, "Took out a bridge, go on." And it was like. It was like, we've got to shut down the milling operations for a little bit. And I was like, a flood? Shutting down uranium operations? Go on. And then it starts talking about Cigar Lake. And I'm like, Cigar Lake? Flood? Like, what? And the uranium space is getting... I haven't heard any more about it since
that
Sunday. But clearly there's massive... exactly right. Clearly, in one of the lines in there was like, you know, if operations remain offline for any length amount of time, it's gonna obviously affect our production guidance for 2026. And we know that there's a precarious supply balance or imbalance, however you want to look at it, in the uranium space. Not a lot of pounds for sale, a lot of pounds that have been absorbed by the Sprott Uranium Trust and Yellowcake and those sorts of things. And then today I started seeing charts go around about how Cameco's been borrowing pounds on loan to meet their contracts. And then I continue to see announcements about the extension of reactor lives and building new reactors and, you know, Three Mile Island, which I forget the new rebranded name all the time. But that was back in Bloomberg articles this week talking about how it's going to be online sooner than later. Bloomberg had this really good 25-minute video out about the nuclear resurgence. I don't know if you saw that, but it's worth checking out. It's for free. I logged out of my account to see if you could watch it, and you can watch it even if you're not a Bloomberg subscriber. But a really in-depth 25-minute video about the nuclear resurgence, how it's been accepted, how we, you know, turn uranium ore into yellowcake, into hexafluoride gas, into fuel pellets, separating the U-235 and all this sort of stuff. And I'm watching it and I'm thinking, I'm getting a little bit off topic now, but I'm like, well, where's all the uranium going to come from? That's normally what I think when I see stuff like that. And then it starts talking about NextGen and the Arrow deposit. And this is in mainstream, like Bloomberg stuff. Mm. They sent a camera crew up to northern Saskatchewan, where I've been to look at Patterson Lake. They sent them up there to look at Arrow deposit, and, you know, they're scanning the core with the scintillometer, and, you know, the Geiger counts going off and all sorts of stuff. And anyway, you should go check out that video on Bloomberg, because it ends up talking about like Centrus, which is an American manufacturer of highly enriched light uranium, HALEU. And yeah, like there's going to be an ongoing supply deficit, like we're now seeing play out in copper. That's going to come to uranium in the not too distant future, especially. And I should tie the ends together for those of you who don't know, like a flood in Saskatchewan is what kicked off the last uranium bull market in 2006, 2007, that sent companies up not 1,000%, not 10,000%, like 100. Paladin went up like 100,000%, right? So we'll see how long that Key Lake mill stays offline. But, you know, if you're looking for a spark in the uranium space, that's certainly it. And I'll provide an update if and when one comes. Yeah, but I thought that was super, super interesting.
It adds fuel to the fire, right? We didn't need Cigar Lake or MacArthur like to flood or any supply issues to know that we're in a uranium bull that's just getting going again. But that certainly doesn't hurt. And again, we've seen this in copper with mines that were supposed to come online this year that are now getting put off for another year. Some of the biggest in the world, right? These are not exactly. These aren't one-off,
still offline, folks.
This is going to continue. So I thought you put a beautiful bow on that point. What you're seeing in copper, you're seeing in lithium right now, you're going to see it in uranium as well. So position well. I think that's a perfect segue to get into the premium portion of the podcast. Maybe we could talk about a couple of those names that are looking good and robust and cheap right now, because there's a lot of them. That's it, folks. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 364th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Take care out there, everyone. Have a great, great week.
See ya.